go ahead.
Okay. Welcome, listeners. Somehow we have the Problem Corner music on the Shooter's Corner program, but I think we'll get that fixed. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK. And it is another beautiful day outside. And for our out-of-state listeners, the sun is shining with just a few clouds. The temperature at my house is 55 degrees this morning. And I am enjoying the warmer weather so much. I taught a class on Wednesday, so I didn't get to take my daily hike, and I hope to hike later this afternoon and maybe go to the range to shoot tonight. If any of you are thinking of going to the Fish and Game Range to practice your shooting, maybe I'll meet you there. The class my co-instructor and I taught Wednesday was our first firearms class given over the internet as a distance delivery class. We proved to ourselves that this method is doable to the great extent. The class was being provided as a refresher to people who have to take a firearm.
You have a phone call.
Oh, okay. All right. Caller, this is Laura.
Hey, Laura. This is Rob Wright from Alaska Bear Guards. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Rob, but can I ask you to call me after the program? Is that okay? We're not going to have guests on today until I'm able to do the program on from the studio.
Okay, well, I don't have your number, so...
Okay, well, this isn't the time to talk about it. I'll give you a call after the program. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, so the class was being provided as a refresher to people who have to take a firearm safety and use class every year to be able to go out into the field. All the attendees had taken our class in person before, so they all had hands-on experience with their firearms and live fire training. But this year with the COVID-19 mandates, it just wasn't possible to give a hands-on in-person class to as many people as we had to cover. It was a large group. So we tried this distance delivery method. And we haven't received the evaluations back from the students yet, but I'll let you know if they think we did a good job. And if this is a method that works for them, maybe this is a way of the future. We always take our student evaluation comments very seriously. We spend a lot of time after class discussing those comments, and we do make changes in our presentations based on these comments. So I'll let Shooter's Corner listeners know if our new method was a success as soon as the comments come in. And on that same token, I've received a few calls from Shooter's Corner listeners, and I appreciate your comments and suggestions very much. I'm continuing to do Shooter's Corner from my home office, and I want to thank Johan, who was running the board for me the last few weeks, and Melissa, who is now running the board for me. I appreciate that. And so please stay with us throughout this program because we have, as usual, a lot to talk about together. Now, I read an article titled Gun Sales Amid the Coronavirus Pandemic Spike, 71% in April. The article noted that, and this is amazing numbers, 1,797,910 guns were sold in April of 2020. And that is a 71.3% increase from April of last year. And March saw an even higher surge in sales with 2,583,238 firearms sold, or 85.3% more than March of 2019. This data is from a group called Small Arms Analytics and Forecasting. They're a company that charges for data and research relating to the firearms industry. They say they are politically unaffiliated and independent. And the article notes what we already know, all of our listeners, that people want to protect themselves during the pandemic, that they are concerned about food shortages and want to be able to hunt, though the majority of those guns sold were handguns. So just think about that, a 71.3% year, month over month from April 2019 to this last month. That's a lot of guns. I'm going to do a short time capsule. I want to use most of our hour to finish up where we left off last week and move into some defensive shooting handguns. I seem to never have enough time to finish my notes for the program, so I'm going to try to do that today. Oddly, I found a large number of entries for important events happening on May 7th of a year, but not many of those had any relationship to firearms discussions. But there was one that I think is really important for us to remember, and that is that on May 7th, 1915, the RMS Lusitania, a civilian ship, was sunk by a German submarine, a U-boat. And this was during World War I, and the British had implemented a naval blockade of Germany, and Germany retaliated by torpedoing the RMS Lusitania, which was en route from New York to Liverpool, England. There were 1,962 people on board, and of those, 1,266 were passengers and 696 were crew. 1,201 people were killed and 761 survived. The ship sank in 18 minutes. And RMS stands for Royal Mail Ship, if any of you don't know. The RMS vessels were normally steamships, or what we call steamers. And they had contracts with the British Royal Mail to carry mail, and had been doing so since 1840. But they also carried passengers. They were also passenger ships. And the sinking of the Lusitania turned public opinion against Germany and was one incident that turned American minds favorably towards entering World War I. From what I read online, at that time in the First World War, tactics for evading submarines were not yet properly implemented or even understood. Now, there was an argument, there is still argument, I guess, whether the RMS Lusitania was a legitimate military target because she was carrying over 4 million rounds of small arms ammunition, 303 caliber, almost 5,000 shrapnel shell casings, for a total of some 50 tons, and 3,240 brass percussion fuses. And this was in addition to all of the passengers. There's a movie titled Sinking of the Lusitania, Terror at Sea, and we can watch it free on YouTube. I plan to do that as soon as I have time. Remember, we talked about YouTube. I guess that's a gift to us to be able to watch these movies at no cost. Now, I did watch snippets of it last night, and I realized there's a lot of wartime politics involved with what happened to the Lusitania. So I looked at some of the court case on the video, and I think you might enjoy that. So there's one more interesting item for May 7th. That has nothing to do with firearms, but on May 7th, 1926, it was reported that one-third of our nation's exports were motors. And I thought that was important because it just goes to show the prevalence of manufacturing in our economy at that time. So that is the end of my time capsule, and we are going to break, weather, and a word from our sponsors, and I'll be right back.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design here. When I hear lights and sirens, I'm reminded of how fortunate we are to have our dedicated and heroic response personnel watching over us, because many times someone's life is on the line. Chances are we've installed those lights and equipped that vehicle with sirens, comms, and cameras. I'm proud that my team is picked for the dependable installations they need, as it shows how dependable our work is at Auto Trim Design. So if you're looking for accessories to outfit your personal rig, depend on the best. Depend on Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
Extend the life of your car or truck. Keep it in top shape with Rogers Auto Repair. Rogers is a complete auto shop. They do it all. Tune-ups to winterizing. Even engine and transmission rebuilds right on the premises. Depend on the people with experience and a sound reputation. They've been helping folks from the same location near the airport on Dale Road since they opened in 1967. Call family-owned and operated Rogers Auto Repair and be their next satisfied customer. Call 479-6665. Rogers Auto Repair. It won't be long now. The road has been waiting patiently for you to get out and play. And Arctic RV is here to make sure your trailer, motorhome, or camper is ready to roll. Wheel bearings to lights, wiring to appliances. Your toys will be as ready as you are. For parts, service, bodywork, Jayco trailer sales, Arctic RV is open Monday through Friday from 9 to 1. Make your service appointment now. Alaska plays rough. Rough it in style. Arctic RV, 30th and Pegger, Fairbanks.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255. 458-TALK, and tell us what's on your mind about firearms.
You do have a call.
Oh, great. Okay, caller, this is Laura. Well,
looks like we lost him.
Okay, looks like we're having a lot of call problems today. It might be one of those days. I do have a little unfinished business. Al, this is for you. I don't have an answer for you yet on your questions about whether the intent or goals of the hunter education classes are being met, exactly how that is being measured, if it is.
Your caller's back.
Oh, okay. Caller, this is Laura.
Hi, this is Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Yeah, you were talking about the Lusitania.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a big part that you mentioned all the ammunition and shells and everything that they found, but they also... the Germans put in the newspaper for them not to get on that ship. They told them they were going to sink it. It was in the New York paper.
So, I am losing you. Talk louder.
Okay. The Germans put it in the newspaper days before the sailing and told all the passengers not to get on the ship.
Interesting. And, do you know, I watched part of the reenactment of the court case, and, of course, it's hard to know at this point in history what's true and what's embellished, but it sounded to me like they were trying to blame the captain, saying that the captain was in cahoots with the Germans and that he didn't follow instructions in the whereabouts of his ship at the time, that he just sat there waiting for this to happen. And I guess there was a lot of political push and pull. The British wanted to use it for politically to bring the United States into the war.
Definitely, that was definitely part of it. And the Germans knew that, and they tried to put it in the newspaper and told all the Americans not to get on the ship, that they were going to sink it.
Interesting.
And it's definitely, America did not want to get into the war. The vast majority of the people didn't want anything to do with it, and so they're trying to come up with a way to get us involved. I don't believe the captain wasn't any more involved than the politicians and everybody else. They knew that ship was going to be sunk.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story to me. I like doing these time capsules on the program because it actually forces me into learning new things. And when I started getting into the Lusitania, I realized, wow, there is a lot here that I don't know. So I definitely want to watch that movie that was made about it and do a little bit more research, because these are important things in our history.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of the actual newspaper that it was, the New York Times or whatever it was
uh-huh.
at the time. And they, they showed us that in history class.
Actual
copies of the paper. On the front page, Germans said, "Don't get on it."
Interesting.
It was kind of a setup.
Interesting. See, I didn't read that part, and that's probably because I didn't do enough research in depth for the program. But all of these bits and pieces are very, very interesting. Are you a history buff?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Oh, good. Well, whenever I bring up something from history, please call in with your comments. And something interesting, especially about guns, it's hard to find things about guns that happen on specific dates. Call in and tell us.
You know, on your self-defense classes and talking about handguns, dude, you should look into the 10% rule.
Oh.
With the military has been doing studies since World War I, right when you're talking about. And they've studied how, whether people... Most people don't have self-defense in them and have to be brought out.
Oh, Oh, you know what? In their mindset, I think I'm going to be talking about something similar to what you're talking about, not the 10% rule. You'll have to explain that to me.
Yeah, it's a military study that they did with people, and, you know, that goes back to World War I with shell shock and PTSD and all this, and how they could figure, you know, they're, you know, trying to figure it all out, and the psychologist figured a lot of it out. And if you look into that, you can figure how you can put people in fighter or non-fighter class, and 10% of the people have it in them automatically, and it's not who you think it's going to be.
Interesting. I'm going to look that up.
Take a look at it. There's lots to do, and you can get a lot of information out of that, out of those studies.
Oh, thank you very much for bringing this up. I definitely will take a look at it and report back what I find. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, let's see. I was talking to Al, but I didn't have an answer yet on his questions about whether the intent or goals of hunter education classes are being met, or actually how they're measuring it, and what are the statistics if they are measuring it, or exactly what their goals were for having hunter education classes. So I hope to have an answer at some point. I will not forget you. Now, let's move on to the main part of our discussion this morning, and I will start with a recap from the past weeks, and then I'll finish up the discussion on the physiological reactions that we might experience in stressful encounters. I call these altered states. And if we have time, and I think we will, I want to move on to defensive shooting concepts. Obviously, we can't do any live firing as radio listeners, but it's important to talk about the real shooting part, not just our mental states. And I think I can draw a good picture with words to describe how we teach the basic defensive shooting concepts to students who are not familiar with them. And remember, it will be basic concepts. And I think you will be able to visualize how to practice and what the end result of your practice session should look like, meaning how you analyze the shot patterns on your targets when you're shooting for defensive accuracy. And shooting for defensive accuracy is different than target shooting at a bullseye. So we'll get to that later this hour or next week, and it will likely take me a couple of programs to finish that up. So bear with me. We usually give an 8-hour class or a 16-hour class, and I'm trying to do this in hourly bits, but we will get through it. So I will recap where we are in our Shooter's Corner discussions right now. Over the past 3 weeks, we discussed situational awareness. We learned about levels of awareness. And using NRA terminology, those levels are unaware, aware, alert, and alarm. And last week, we finished up talking about the state of being in the alarm stage. For a quick review, when your mind recognizes a potential threat exists, you move to the alert stage. That's the third stage. And when you are in that alert stage, you create a threshold of behavior that if the bad guy does that behavior, it's a signal to you that you are facing imminent danger. And that is when you move from the alert stage to the alarm stage. That's the last stage. Your intuition kicks in, because our minds process a great many stimuli at once. And what our intuition is telling us at this moment is that the stimuli we're processing, the bad vibes, if you will, the bad vibes from the bad guy, causes our natural fear factor to kick in, and we move to the alarm stage. So we're moving from alert to alarm. Remember not to second guess your natural instincts. If you sense you're in a bad situation, start developing ways you can get out of that situation. And that is always the preferential behavior before we have to go to firearms. The last 2 weeks, we learned to set thresholds to stimuli from the bad guy and to develop actions we will take in response to those threshold stimuli. So we are done with the portion on unaware, aware, alert, and alarm. Then last week, we moved into another important topic, the physical and physiological states that we may experience in stressful situations. And having to defend ourselves is a stressful situation or a stressful encounter. I explained that when we are threatened with bodily harm, Our body responds in numerous ways. The parts of our brain that control the higher thought process begin to shut down. That shutting down process relinquishes control to the more primitive, survival-oriented brain centers. I said that every life-threatening encounter is different and that each of us will respond to an attack in a different way. If we've been in a stressful situation or in a self-defense situation before, that doesn't mean our bodies will react the same way again. And remember, though we're talking about self-defense here, much of how our body responds to stress is the same way with any severe stress we're subjected to in our lives.
We have a call.
Oh, okay. Caller, this is Laura.
Hello?
Yes?
Yeah, this is not exactly in your topic right now, but I wanted to call your attention to something before I forgot about it.
Yes.
And we're talking about defensive situations. You might want to look into the advancement of the use of red dot sights on pistols for defensive shooting. There's an outfit called Sage Dynamics.
Oh, say that again so I can write it down.
Sage Dynamics.
How do you spell it?
Sage, S-A-G-E.
Oh, Sage. Okay, S-A-G-E. Sage Dynamics.
Yes. And the fellow that heads it up is a guy named Aaron Cowan, C-O-W-A-E-N. And at any rate, he has a white paper contained in his website.
Okay.
That addresses the increased usage by actual enforcement departments in the use of red dot sights and their ability to see the whole picture. In other words, target focus as opposed to front sight focus.
Right, right.
And the three different sighting planes that conventional sights force us into. And at any rate, that might be something you want to consider for a future show.
Oh, I really appreciate this. And yes, it definitely is. And one of my co-instructors, that's his expertise. He's done a lot of studying on this, and he's recommended to me several books to read on this. And it's something I'm very interested in because I'm at a point in my life where if I buy again, I have to assume I'm going to put a red dot on it. And you're right, we're moving from front sight focus to target focus with the red dot. And it's a different procedure. It's a different way to think about things. And also the quick acquisition of the red dot. I have suppressor sights or the larger co-witness sights on my guns that do have red dots. And it's very difficult for me to break that habit of aligning my sights as opposed to not worrying about the sights and immediately acquiring that red dot. So that's a...
Well, that's all pretty much a matter of presentation more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Which I have I've put one on one of my pistols, and I'm in the same situation you are. The front sight has become increasingly harder to pick up for me. I have this very unnerving feeling that it may have something to do with the absence of color in some of my hair.
I know what you're talking about. And this is very apropos that you called today, and it may be quite a few weeks before I get to this, but we will talk about this at some point because it's very important. Later on, and I don't know if I'll get to it today, I kind of wanted for once to finish my discussion, and I never seem to be able to, but I talk too much. Later on in the discussion that I had planned for today, we're going to go to break. Hang on after break, and we'll finish this up.
News, I'm Rich Dennison. A member of the military who serves as President Trump's personal valet in the White House has tested positive for coronavirus.
White House spokesman Hogan Gidley saying in a statement that a member of the U.S. military who works on the White House campus has tested positive for coronavirus. He continued, the president and the vice president have since tested negative for the virus and they remain in great health.
Fox's John Decker at the White House. Another tough week on the job front for Americans dealing with the pandemic.
There There were 3.1 million new claims for unemployment benefits last week, a slightly higher number than forecast. In recent weeks, the number of claims were in the millions.
I apologize. I have no control over that one. It's a hot fire, and it's going to go.
In late March.
Fox's Ginny Casola. Coronavirus deaths in the U.S. have passed 73,000, with more than 1.2 million confirmed cases in the country. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
A 10th Alaskan has died from COVID-19. The most recent victim of the infectious disease caused by the coronavirus was an Anchor Point man in his 80s. His case was first reported to the state on April 30th, and the onset date was listed as April 28th. The man contracted the virus through community spread. There was one new case of COVID-19 reported in Alaska on Wednesday, bringing the total case count to 372, with 284 people considered recovered. The new case was diagnosed to a resident in Tok. And finally, two cruise lines say they're going to cancel the remaining sailings they had planned for Alaska this summer. Princess Cruises and Holland America Line had previously announced sharply reduced plans for voyages to and tours in Alaska. Earlier this week, Carnival Cruise Line announced they were going to cancel their trips to Alaska. Carnival Cruise Line, Princess Cruises, and Holland America all fall under the Carnival Corporation umbrella. An official with the trade organization Cruise Lines International Association Alaska says the state faces a loss of 479 voyages with a passenger capacity of more than 955,000.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design here. When I hear lights and sirens, I'm reminded of how fortunate we are to have our dedicated and heroic response personnel watching over us. Because many times someone's life is on the line. Chances are we've installed those lights and equipped that vehicle with sirens, comms, and cameras. I'm proud that my team is picked for the dependable installations they need, as it shows how dependable our work is at Auto Trim Design. So if you're looking for accessories to outfit your personal rig, depend on the best. Depend on Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
It won't be long now. The road has been waiting patiently for you to get out and play. And Arctic RV is here to make sure your trailer, motorhome, or camper is ready to roll. Wheel bearings to lights, wiring to appliances. Your toys will be as ready as you are. For parts, service, bodywork, Jayco trailer sales, Arctic RV is open Monday through Friday from 9 to 1. Make your service appointment now. Alaska plays rough. Rough it in style. Arctic RV, 30th and Pegger, Fairbanks.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK. And I don't know if my caller made it through the commercial or not, but I will look up the Sage Dynamics and the white paper on the red dots. And what is interesting about that phone call is later in the discussion today, but we may not get to it till next week. When we talk about defensive shooting, we're talking about quickening or speeding up the process. So you really don't have time when you're trying to shoot in split seconds to get a proper front sight, sight picture, proper acquisition. And so we move to the next level of defensive shooting, which is sight deviation. And I will start talking about that as soon as we can. And the sight deviation means your front sight's going to be anywhere within your rear sight notches. It could be to high, low, to the left, or the right, because you're using speed instead of a perfectly aimed shot. But I'll talk about how the speed and the distance you are to your target has to do with the shot pattern and how you can analyze your shot pattern to see if you're shooting for what we call defensive accuracy, which is different than shooting a little tiny little spot on a bullseye target. Defensive accuracy is a much bigger area. So I'm excited to be able to talk about all that, but I got to get the preliminary stuff done so we have the background to be able to understand why we're going to do what we're doing. So I will, as I said, look up the red dots and the Sage Dynamics because those are important. The red dots are very important to me, and a lot of our students use them too. So I was talking about that in stress. The stress issues that we talked about not only happen in self-defense, but they could happen with any severe stresses in our lives, and that there is no way to know ahead of time how we will react in a life-threatening situation. And actually, all of this is going to play into when we talk about the defense of shooting, because that stress is going to enter into how you take your shots and what your shot pattern is going to look like. So that said, there are groups of people in our society who are highly trained for stress and life-threatening encounters, and to be able to effectively inflict deadly force when necessary. And they're taught methods to try to operate effectively when they are in some of the worst conditions we can think of. But we, the average person, don't have that type of training, although there could be some people listening that do have that type of training. I don't. I don't even know much of what's involved in it. I do know that there are people that are trained on that level. So stay with me while I get us caught up here and we can move forward. Last week, we revisited Gavin De Becker's theory on fear, and I read a quote in which Gavin De Becker said, "True fear is a survival signal that sounds only in the presence of danger." And I reminded us that once we feel real fear, our body will respond to the situation. We went over the ways in which we physically respond, and they are freeze, submit, posture, flight, or fight. And I won't review those unless any of you have questions about them, but we did finish those five physical states. And I just had a few minutes to begin our discussion on the physiological reactions. Remember, I said these are not reactions we can control. They are involuntary, and we never know which ones will kick in. Perhaps all of them will kick in. And these physiological reactions I wanted to talk about included adrenaline rush and loss of fine motor skills. And we did finish, if I remember correctly, discussing those. And then Betty called in and shared her story about confronting bears at her house. And some of her physiological reactions were the same as if the encounter had been with a human. So whether it is defensive, with an animal or a person, you're going to feel those same stress responses. But then we ran out of time, and I didn't get to discuss the perceptual changes we experience. So let's discuss perceptual changes that we might experience during a threatening encounter. The perceptual changes are tunnel vision, auditory exclusion, time dilation, and temporary loss of memory. For survivors of violent attacks and people who have experienced other extreme stress situations, it's common for them to report that their perceptions of visual and auditory stimuli and their sense of passage of time seem altered. The alterations they feel have to do with tunnel vision, the auditory exclusion, and the time dilation. And these are involuntary physiological reactions we experience. They may have evolved as survival mechanisms in humans to help us focus all of our senses and concentration on the immediate danger. The NRA notes, and I quote this is from their book, that while these changes may have worked extremely well enabling our ancestors to fight saber-toothed tigers, they do not always provide as much of a benefit when dealing with one or more intelligent, determined human assailants, unquote. So the first altered state perception we'll talk about is tunnel vision. Under extreme stress or while being attacked, if tunnel vision kicks in, we'll be focused exclusively on the perceived threat. This means we will be oblivious to anything else going on around us elsewhere in our visual field. And I'd like to know if any of you have experienced tunnel vision and in what circumstances. I know I have. Most of my fearful experiences have been when I used to run dogs. And one notable experience was when I was training my dog team one fall many years ago. Back then, I used to trek the dogs and trailer my four-wheeler out back of the airport on the roads that follow the dike system along the Tanana. And some dog mushers would train up on those raised embankments, but I never trusted my dogs to do that. So I stayed low on the road, and even that got me into trouble one day. I set off with the dogs pulling the four-wheeler for fall training, and unfortunately, right at the first corner, while the dogs are all revved up with energy just starting out, there was a car parked there. And at that corner, there's a steep embankment on the left, but that had never been a problem before because there had never been a car parked there. So as my dogs headed down the road and we were about to turn that corner, I figured they would be logical, right? Dogs are logical, silly me. And I expected them to go around the parked car on the right side of the car where there was lots of space on the road. But of course, they were going to play games with me, and the leaders zipped to the left at the last second. They zipped to the left of the car and to make that right turn around the corner. And on the left of the car, there was hardly any room. That's where the steep embankment was. There was hardly any room for the dogs and definitely no room for the four-wheeler to clear that embankment. So I tried to brake, but I couldn't get them stopped in time. And so down the embankment, the lead dogs went with me on the four-wheeler, about to roll downhill too. And I recall looking around in the split seconds and seeing no one that could help, no one at all. And the dogs finally stopped. I managed to get the four-wheeler stabilized by putting my downhill side foot on the ground to keep it from rolling over. And just as things calmed down for a second, I was trying to figure out how to get off the four-wheeler without it rolling over and breaking my leg. I needed to get off the four-wheeler and get to the lead dogs to turn them back up the embankment. I looked up the embankment, and there was a person standing there, probably the owner of the car. And I think he might have been there the whole time. And if he was, I could have called out for help, for him to help me, so the whole situation wouldn't have happened. At the time, I was amazed. I remember, how did I not see that help was standing right there? Well, I had been concentrating on a perceived threat, which was the dogs were going on the wrong side of the parked car, and a split second later, I went from imminent danger to the fight, keeping the four-wheeler from rolling over on me, and I'm sure I suffered from tunnel vision from all that stress. I didn't recognize it at the time as such, but now that I know what I know, I'm sure that's what it was. And all I could see in my cone of vision were the dogs in front of me and the steep angle to my left. And to this day, I think that person standing by his car watching all this unfold had been there, and that I experienced tunnel vision during that incident. So that's what that will do. Tunnel vision in terms of defensive shooting, we must avoid it. If we suffer from tunnel vision, we're going to fail to recognize additional threats or perhaps innocent persons standing nearby to us. All that would be outside of our immediate field of vision if we have this tunnel vision. In our classes during live fire, we do teach how to break the tunnel vision, and we emphasize to students to practice this method routinely so they do it automatically in a stress situation. And one way to build breaking the tunnel vision into your practice routine is, and you can all do this when you shoot, take your shots and then lower or move your firearm to one of the ready positions, and then turn your head or your body from the waist both directions. Look to the left and look to the right. All right, you're looking for additional threats that might be on the side of you or behind you, but the process of doing that breaks your tunnel vision and allows you to see any threats that are approaching you from another angle. And I hear the music, so let's go to our third break of the day, and I'll be right back.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design here. When I hear lights and sirens, I'm reminded of how fortunate we are to have our dedicated and heroic response personnel watching over us. Because many times someone's life is on the line. Chances are we've installed those lights and equipped that vehicle with sirens, comms, and cameras. I'm proud that my team is picked for the dependable installations they need, as it shows how dependable our work is at Auto Trim Design. So if you're looking for accessories to outfit your personal rig, depend on the best. Depend on Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
Making the jump into your spring and summer is easy at Frontier Outfitters. You're on the trail with Frontier's extensive camping and fishing supplies, optics, clothing, and more. Is your list a bit longer than that? Sentry Hardware downstairs is loaded with Alaskan summer essentials, ATV, marine, and auto accessories. Latch on to the best selection of nuts, bolts, screws, washers, and fasteners around. Metric and American, brass, stainless, chrome. Find your whatchamacallit at Sentry. Sentry Hardware and Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Extend the life of your car or truck.
You'll come on after the weather.
Keep it in top shape with Rogers Auto Repair. Rogers is a complete auto shop. They do it all. Tune-ups to winterizing. Even engine and transmission rebuilds right on the premises. Depend on the people with experience and a sound reputation. They've been helping folks from the same location near the airport on Dale Road since they opened in 1967. Call family-owned and operated Rogers Auto Repair and be their next satisfied customer. Call 479-6665. Rogers Auto Repair.
KFAR weather.
Mostly sunny today with a chance of some isolated showers late this afternoon. Look for highs today near 66. Tonight, isolated showers with lows near 43. Tomorrow for Friday, partly sunny with high temperatures in the mid to upper 60s. Saturday, partly sunny with highs near 71. And Sunday for Mother's Day, mostly sunny with high temperatures right around 76. This has been a look at your latest Fairbanks area weather forecast.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255, 458-TALK. I appreciate all my listeners. I really appreciate the phone calls and both the phone call about the Lusitania and the Sage Dynamics are very, very interesting. I'm going to follow up on both of those, so thank you. We were talking about tunnel vision and breaking the tunnel vision. So to end that part of the discussion, just build in to your training technique how you're going to break your tunnel vision, and the best way to do that is put your gun into its ready position and then look to your left, look to your right, and that will help break the tunnel vision. The second altered state is auditory exclusion. Under extreme stress, we may not hear extraneous sounds. That is, we may not hear sounds coming from outside our visual perception. And sometimes we might not hear sounds from within our cone of vision. The NRA notes that, and I quote, people involved in shooting often report that the sound of their own gunshots was no louder than a pop gun, unquote. To help counteract the auditory exclusion, we recommend to scream commands to the assailant, and this serves to break through that audio exclusion, and at the same time, by screaming the commands, it serves to intimidate the assailant. And it's not only ourselves that might experience auditory exclusion. It could be our family members who are present that we're trying to protect. They might experience this, too, because they're feeling the stress that we're feeling. So that's yet another reason to yell your commands or directions to those around you, including your family. If you want them to move here or move there, yell that, shout that. The third altered state is time dilation. If time dilation happens to you under stress, and it does to many people, it has to me, then your perception of time slows. It will seem like your movements and those movements of your assailant are happening in slow motion. You'll lose the ability to accurately determine the passage of time. Remember, most altercations happen quickly. But if you experience time dilation, the actual time during which the incident is occurring will seem much longer than it really is. About 3 years ago, I was headed down Geist Road. I think I talked about this car accident on a previous program. And someone turned right in front of me as I was just passing straight down Geist through the intersection of Thompson Drive. And I ran right into them. And I remember this seemed to be happening in slow motion as I hit the brakes. But I still slid into the other car very slowly. It took split seconds, but it seemed like it took minutes. And I remember seeing things flying around the inside of my truck in slow motion. They were moving very slowly. And I remember my truck spinning around from the impact very slowly. But all of this could only have taken a few seconds to happen. It seemed like 5 minutes because it was very stressful. Okay. A few weeks ago, when we were talking about going to your safe room and not emerging until you've not heard any noise for, say, 15 minutes, if you're experiencing time dilation, the time is going to seem to pass much more slowly, and just a few minutes may seem like 15 minutes to you. So make sure in any perceived threat or actual attack situation that you wait much longer than you might initially think necessary before you relax and let your guard down. The fourth altered state is temporary loss of memory. And being involved in a high-stress event may cause us to suffer a mental overload, and that can result in a temporary loss of memory. And I think I will just attribute my lack of remembering things to stress. That's what I'll tell people. It's a good excuse. But seriously, we're told that usually this temporary loss of memory has to do with forgetting or being confused about details of an encounter. But sometimes the person will completely lose all memories of a stressful event. So a temporary loss of memory becomes a problem if you try to make comments to the police or other authorities about the event too soon afterwards. Too soon after the event, you simply may not remember all the details with clarity. You need some time for that to come back into your mind. And that's why the NRA suggests, and we tell students in the concealed carry class, that if you're involved in a self-defense shooting, as a general rule, tell responding officers, and I'm going to quote this from the NRA material, only that you were unlawfully attacked by a violent adversary and had to use force to defend your life, avoid making any other statements until you have consulted an attorney, unquote. So in our concealed carry classes, we also tell students to have the name and contact information for an attorney they would use should a situation like that occur. After you fired shots and possibly wounded or killed an assailant, that's not the time to start thumbing through the phone book to find an attorney. Figure out who you're going to use and keep that contact information in your billfold. So if any of my listeners have information they'd like to add or experiences that you'd like to share, please call in 458-8255-458-TALK. And also, tell us what future information you'd like to hear on Shooter's Corner programs. So let me move on to defensive shooting concepts. I don't have much time. I'll catch us back up next week and we'll move forward. What we're going to do is talk about using our firearms in a defensive situation. And there's some background that I have to give you first. So I consider this to be the beginning of talking about basic defensive shooting concepts. And I expect we'll revisit the discussions about the mental states we just discussed many times in the future because they play into how we handle our guns in these situations. And there's also much more information out there that I can bring into the discussion. But as scientists learn more about the brain and how our bodies work, more books are being written and more firearms trainers are working with these new techniques. But right now, I'm working through what I would teach in an NRA personal protection inside the home or personal protection outside the home course. And that curriculum is excellent to introduce students to the basics of self-defense with firearms and build the platform for future classes that they might want to take. And in those terms, there's a gentleman in town, Chuck Indereedon, and I'm sure he's okay with my giving his name out. He teaches advanced defensive pistol classes, so you could move from what I'm teaching you, the NRA basics of self-defense with firearms, to more advanced defensive pistol instruction with Chuck. And his website is C4TrainingGroup.com. That's C as in cat, 4, the number 4, so C4TrainingGroup.com. And I hope I can talk him into coming onto the program to talk to you at some point about what he teaches and his background. So, talking about defensive shooting techniques, we have to talk about having a defensive mindset. And first we have to define the word mindset. A mindset is a set of assumptions and methods that influence our behavior, choices, or use of specific tools. For personal protection, we must have a defensive mindset. We have a mindset about foods we eat. We choose a style of clothes we wear, why we choose that style. We have a mindset about our politics, our interactions with people, and many more things. But here we're only talking about a defensive mindset and how that plays into our being successful in a personal defense situation. Now, having a defensive mindset means we have mastered and are confident in our use of a firearm, if that's what we choose to use, and that we understand we must persevere in a defensive encounter, and that we have planned and prepared and practiced for self-defense situations. I guess you can say that's the three P's: plan, prepare, and practice. In other words, we're confident. It all boils down to you have to be confident. Now, I've talked about Rob Pincus before on this program. His company website is personaldefensenetwork.com. All run together. His company's name, it's referred to as PDN, Personal Defense Network. And there are a number of people who are considered experts in the field, and he is one of them. And his website publishes articles from some of these other instructors and experts, so it's a good resource. And if you take the link on the website for who we are and scroll down to the list of names with links of the experts who provide education, you can learn a lot. You can learn quite a bit from these books or articles that they've written. So I was searching for a way to describe the term defensive mindset for you using the simplest definition that I could. And I found a perfect definition in some quotes by one of the firearms trainers who is associated with the Personal Defense Network. And let me see if I can finish this before the end of the hour. That gentleman's name is Joshua Gideon. And his article is titled, of course, The Defensive Mindset. And he says it so well, I'm going to quote. I'm not going to paraphrase. So here's the quote. In the spring of 2008, I had the opportunity to travel to Washington, D.C. with a couple members of the FBI Cyber Division based in Indianapolis. I recall walking with them down the streets of D.C. and realizing I was the only one in the group without a firearm. I made an offhand remark about being the only one of us who was unarmed. One of the special agents stopped walking, looked at me in the eye, and said, "Being armed is a mindset. You don't need a gun to be armed," unquote. And then one of the photo captions in the article reads, "Just because you have a firearm doesn't mean you are armed." So what does having a firearm play into our defensive mindset? What part does it play? The author, Joshua Gideon, a few paragraphs later, goes on to say, and this is a long quote, and I'll try to get it finished here, "I looked up several definitions of the word armed and found that many include the word weapon. Our ability to think and reason is what puts us at the top of the food chain. One of the better definitions I found was furnished with something that provides security, strength, or efficacy. Our best weapon is the mindset of strength, security, and efficacy. And what is efficacy? That's a capacity for producing the desired results or effect." And I'm going to leave it here. I'll pick up next week. Thank you, callers. Thank you, listeners, and have a great week.